The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast.
Dr. Taz. Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back, everyone. I am honored today to have with me Light Watkins, and he is here hopefully to help us all. I know I need some help, but Light Watkins is a meditation expert. He recognized his passion for teaching meditation after meeting his guru in 2002. Following years of daily meditation, Vedic studies, and apprenticeship, Light traveled to India to be trained in the ancient ways of teaching meditation. Afterwards, he dedicated himself to transforming people from all walks of life into self-sufficient meditators. Light students have used meditation to whip PTSD, hypertension, sleep deprivation, anxiety, depression, and even cancer. To date, Light has personally taught over 1,000 people to meditate, having yet to meet someone he couldn't teach. Light, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Taz. I'm impressed, by the way, that you you pronounce Vedic correctly. A lot of people, surprisingly, they call it Vedic, so it shows me that you know a little something about ancient Indian culture.
I know a little bit, and it may help that, you know, we are Indian, but I am the most non-Indian Indian you'll find because I haven't stepped foot in the country since I was 10 years old. So anyhow, it's admiration from afar. And I love your name. I mean, I love that, Light. Is that your given name? I have to ask.
Well, that's a whole story. The long story short is that it's not my given name. It was a name that was born out of a conversation that I was having with a friend of mine where we were actually I wasn't really making fun of people who changed their names, but I was just kind of almost admiring the courage behind some people's choices and names in Los Angeles. Because Los Angeles is kind of known as being the town of like one name people, Sting, mm-hmm. Cher, you know, and
Taz.
But also
I'm
people,
just teasing.
Yeah, we could keep going, but also people, people who have changed their names to things like Sky and Tree and Conscious and Integrity. And these are all real names of people that I know.
Right.
And I was telling a buddy of mine one day at lunch that I met a Govindas. I'd met a guy named Mother. I'd met a guy named Pineapple Head. And we were just kind of having a little bit of a laugh about it. And then I posed a hypothetical question to him. I said, what would you change your name to if you had to take on one of those kind of LA sounding names? And my friend said Ocean, and he repeated the question to me, and I said, oh, I don't think I would do something like that. And he said, well, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And I said, nothing is coming to mind. And he just started counting down 5, 4, 3, 2. And I just blurted out Light. And for some strange reason, the thought to change it just kept percolating. And then I realized that it was coming from a deeper place, you know, same kind of place that you get those inner messages to maybe mm-hmm. move somewhere or go back to school or, you know, marry someone. You know, that it was coming from that place, and I couldn't ignore it. And I decided that it would be a good demonstration of fearlessness to just go with it. So I decided that I was going to go ahead and do it. So that happened 12 years ago. And there's a longer story
stuck.
With more twists and turns, but yeah, it just ended up sticking, and now that's what everyone calls me.
I mean, I think it's appropriate, especially given your expertise in meditation, and given what's going on
now. That's the other
now.
Odd thing, is that it's different from the, I didn't teach meditation at the time. It just was this thing that, maybe it was fortuitous, I don't know. But anyway, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you know, part of what I love doing in my, you know, I'm a physician, and what I love doing in practice, and I literally talk about this in a lot of what I write and when I speak, is literally seeing the light come on in my patients. Like they'll come in, you know, beaten down, you know, just run over, however you want to describe it. And after a few visits, you kind of see that light come back. So light for me is powerful. It's metaphorical. It comes from somewhere else. I love it. And I think it's so appropriate kind of in the walk that you're walking. And it's also really appropriate for the time that we're in right now. I mean, we're coming off of a really rough week. I don't know where you stand on all of it, but you know, what this election in particular has done for the people around me and even for my patients is it sort of cast the opposite. It's cast this cloud of darkness on a lot of people. I know some people were really happy, but for a lot, almost the majority of the country, I think it's just cast this really dark cloud. And some patients, I've got to be honest with you, are really struggling. They're having a really, really hard time coming out of it. And no matter what I say, or have the opportunity to say in the short window of time that I'm with these patients, I'm not sure I'm really delivering the best message. So for somebody like you to walk in, when you know and you've helped so many people along the way, probably deal with that same sense of darkness or that same sense of despair, what would you say to them? What would you say to all of us? What would you say? What should we do? Where do you, you know, help us out a little bit. I think we're all struggling, and I'm disappointed, honestly, to a certain extent, that the leaders in our world, in our community, whether they were the religious leaders or just community figures that we admire, haven't come together more powerfully to help us. So I think a lot of us are just kind of searching on our own for what to do. How do we heal ourselves, and how do we heal each other?
Right. Well, I used to joke before the election. I used to joke with my meditation clients that I was going to vote for Trump, or that I hope Trump win because more people would learn to meditate than ever before
under the Trump administration.
So,
I don't know if meditation will be enough, but we got to start somewhere.
I didn't seriously think he was going to win, though. You know, and if I'm being completely honest with myself, I realize now that. I've been living in a bit of a bubble, and I think a lot of us who live on the coastal regions kind of live in a bit of a bubble where we're a bit disconnected with the realities of what people are feeling and how discontented the society is, a large part of society is, to see Trump as a viable option for changing things up. And while it's also apparent that there's, you know, some darkness that comes with that, I think there's also an opportunity to do as you said, which is to, you know, to go inside and turn on the light. Because, you know, no matter how dark Trump is, if the light is on, then the darkness gets dispelled. And I know that sounds a little bit woo-woo and airy-fairy, but I think that we all have a personal responsibility to be the brightest version of ourselves. And collectively, if we have enough people who are shining out in the darkness, then it's going to help to dispel the darkness. Obviously, we're not going to be able to get rid of all of it in the next 4 years, but we can do our, that's something that we can do, is just in our little corner, in our corner of the world, we can be the lamppost, you know, and that can be our responsibility, is shining our light. And what that means for me is living life with a sense of purpose and passion. Also, making sure you're engaging in your self-care activities, and that you're being a positive example for the things that you want to see in the world. Like, you're embodying everything that you want to see in the world. So if you don't like the Trump way of doing things, then eliminate all the Trump aspects of yourself in your own life, you know, the greed and the gossip and the watching all the reality television, because people don't understand that they're actually adding to the problem when they're engaging in these kinds of behaviors. And that's something that we can all do better with. I know for myself, I can do better with not consuming a lot of pop, you know, junk news. And
definitely.
I watch myself when I'm looking at my news feeds, and there's obviously clickbait articles and things. And I kind of, you know, I'm like everyone, I'm tempted because that's how they craft the headlines, is to get you to click on that thing, to read that stupid article, and you read it, and it's like you just played a part in the whole thing, because now they see what people are reading, and they create more of it. So we have to vote with our attention. We have to vote with our dollars. We have to vote with our work. You know, what work are we choosing to do? And I think all of those things, it empowers us. It keeps us in the driver's seat instead of playing the victim. And it allows us to make the biggest impact on the grassroots level, which is where we really want to make the impact. Because the truth is, the president, you know, is not as powerful as a lot of the grass level politicians, the sheriffs and the judges and the senators and, you know, these kinds of people. So it's not an either or to both ends. But we have
And that's such great advice, because, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we can only be responsible for ourselves and how we transmit our energy out there and what we do. And, you know, for anyone out there who's feeling as others have told me, they feel anxious or they feel stressed or they feel beaten, or like you even said, they feel like a victim. I think it's just remembering that we do have to reach down and we have to turn on the best version of ourselves, and we have to rise above these feelings of anger or resentment. Or, I mean, even resentment. I mean, I've seen resentment between Trump voters and non-Trump voters, like that whole, I've had a patient clearly told me, he's like, I'm looking around going, oh my God, that's how you feel about me? You feel this way about me? Because people are taking this really, really personally. So I think we need to probably shut all that noise down and just dig deep and try to be the best version of ourselves. Now, meditation, I have recommended for years in practice, like many other physicians, especially when it comes to situations like this. They feel like they're out of your control. You feel like that sense of anxiety is coming back, that loss of purpose, all of those feelings. What led you to meditation, and what led you to Vedic meditation in particular?
I started off in yoga, doing a lot of yoga, and obviously, you know, people in the yoga scene, you know, meditation becomes a part of that experience to some extent. And so I dabbled around different meditation circles, groups. This is back in 1998. And so as you can imagine, there wasn't a whole lot of meditation offerings available, but I found a couple little meditation circles here and there. And there's, you know, the people who would go to these things are pretty fringe types. But it was interesting to me. It was mostly interesting because no one else was doing it. But obviously, you know, meditation's been around for a long time. And I was very much a fan of the occult. I used to take astral traveling classes and read channeling books and go to psychics and, you know, things like that. I wasn't even tapped in. What was interesting, I was a skeptic, mm-hmm. and I wanted to see if there was anything to this stuff, because I figured if it could happen to me, then it could happen with anybody. And I'm the type of person that I've never really had a tangible experience of something that was a metaphysical, you know? And so mm-hmm. I was always looking for something to happen, and with meditation, nothing ever really happened. So I just felt like, oh, this is this thing that you have to kind of use your imagination for. And then when I moved to Los Angeles from New York in 2003, I met a transcendental meditation teacher who taught me that technique, and it was like coming home. Basically, it was a style of meditation that was very, very accessible, and it made a lot of sense on all levels, scientific, biological, and just as a regular householder. And that's the first time I ever felt like I was able to experience a true sense of depth of awareness, you know, the whole idea of samadhi and nirvana, these kinds of concepts that you hear around in yoga circles. But I've never felt that I was able to experience them until I started meditating in this way. And then it started happening on a regular basis. And then it was like discovering the ocean for the first time, you know.
How is Vedic meditation different from what we see?
Vedic meditation, Vedic meditation is basically a generic term for the same style as transcendental meditation. Transcendental meditation is Vedic meditation, but it's a trademark version called transcendental meditation.
Gotcha.
So some people teach it, but they're not affiliated with the organization. And my teacher was one of those people. So they sent him a letter and said, hey, look, you can keep teaching, but you can't call it transcendental meditation because that's our trademark. And so he started calling it Vedic meditation. And he began teaching some of his proteges, and now Vedic meditation has become this big movement, but it's not an organization. It's just a network of independent meditation teachers.
So for my early entry meditators, as I call them, people that don't know too much about meditation in general, what is the key difference between transcendental Vedic meditation and maybe meditation that they hear about from Deepak Chopra or from, you know, even from Dr. Weil that I learned in the fellowship, where it was simply just trying to quiet your mind? What are the key differences?
So the key difference is there's two general types of meditation offerings, right? There's guided meditation offerings, and then there are meditation teachers. So there, if you're going to a meditation guide, which is what I started with, then that generally means you're going to be sitting around and listening to instructions, and that person is going to guide you through a sequence of experiences, which may involve visualizing something or focusing on something or letting go of something. And what we do and I'm saying myself, you know, Vedic meditation, transcendental meditation, even Deepak has a thing called primordial sound meditation. What we do is we take the person who wants to become a meditator and we train them to become self-sufficient in the sense that we give them all of the mechanics and the principles, and it's hardly any guidance at all, actually. And then we teach that person to be able to sit down wherever they are, whether it's on a plane, an Uber, living room, office, and close their eyes and to go beyond the busy mind, which is what everybody tends to grapple with in meditation, is that busy, busy mind. They can't stop the mind. Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges with, I think, guided meditation experiences is that you're basically operating at the level of the surface mind, which is the busiest part of the mind. But with the reason they call it transcendental meditation is you're learning how to go beyond, how to transcend the busy mind. So you don't ever have to stop the busy mind. In fact, you can't stop it by thinking about not thinking because that's a thought. But you can go beyond it. You can transcend it. And that's where you hear about the mantras and the transcendental mantras and all of that. So there are sounds that have been discovered to be able to create a transcending-like effect on the mind. And the way you know it's happening is because you don't know it's happening, right? You forget about the fact that you're meditating. So in other words, if you're sitting there the entire time thinking about how wonderful meditation is or how horrible it is, you're not actually as deep in the meditation as you could be. The truest, the deepest meditation are the ones where you don't know what's happening around you. You're basically in the gap in between the thoughts. So that's what the Vedic and transcendental meditation practice helps people to cultivate, is to how to get into the gap in between the thoughts, which is where it feels the best.
That's fascinating. How long of a journey is that for people to kind of get to that point where they can do that? Like,
people can do it on the first day. The thing is,
really?
It's not hard. Yeah, it's not hard to do. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know, Dr. Taz, do you swim?
I swim. And I'm a fake meditator. I will try to meditate, but,
I wasn't a swimmer until I was in my 30s. I'm 43 now. I learned how to swim 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could tread water, but I couldn't swim laps or anything. But people who know how to swim, you know, they may look at the idea of swimming a lap in a pool like, oh, it's nothing. It's easy. I can do that in my sleep, right? But for me, all that water separating one side from the other side, it was dangerous to me. It seemed like, I'm going to drown. It's going to be hard. And that's how a lot of people see meditation. But when you learn the mechanics of swimming, then moving from one side to the other side of the pool is like nothing. It's like, it's easy.
So easy.
Thing you can do. You can learn how to do it in a couple of days, maybe, if not sooner. But, you know, with meditation, if you don't know what you're doing, then it's just going to feel hard and laborious, and you're going to see all those thoughts. I'm going to drown in my thoughts. But if you know the mechanics, then it's easy. You can glide in and out of that state really easily. And so that's what I teach people. And it's not unusual for them to have the experience on the first day to have a really deep experience.
And interesting.
So then what we do is I end up spending a lot of time just kind of helping them develop language around it so they can articulate it, because it's so unique that people don't even know how to describe it.
I think that's amazing. And I know we need you here in Atlanta. I know I need you for sure. But
my whole family lives in Atlanta, so there's a chance I may be in Atlanta soon teaching.
Well, you need to let me know, and we'll actually maybe even organize a group for you to kind of lead us through this. I think it's such an important skill for all of us to have. And it's a running joke. Like, I put myself on a lot of deadlines, and I'll try to go back to meditation, and I'll sit there and I'll look at my husband. I'm like, how much time went by? And he's like, 30 seconds, sweetie. Go back to it. So I know it's something that even I need a lot of help with personally. But you become a meditation teacher. You start a movement called The Shine. Tell us a little bit about that. What is The Shine about, and what are you trying to do with that?
So over the last 15 years, while I've been meditating, I'm basically making a living from helping people learn to meditate. Obviously, you know, if you're starting to get happiness inside, you don't need a lot of happiness. You don't need to find happiness through the regular means that people find. Yeah. I mean, it's not that you don't engage in life, but my point was, I stopped drinking alcohol when I was in my mid-20s because I just didn't really feel the need for it anymore. And I realized that it was, even though it's a nice social experience, it was a little bit of a crutch to feeling connected or feeling you know, buzzed. And so I started getting that buzz inside, and I didn't really have to, you know, LA is a town of sober people, people who had a problem at one point and they went to some program and now they don't drink. But it was never like that for me. It was, for me, it was just a choice. I just woke up one day and decided this is not really adding anything to my life. But, you know, I'm still very much a regular person. I love being recreational. I love going out on dates and going to sports events and things like that. And so my reality was I would meditate before going to the movies. I would meditate before going for a run. I would go out to dinner and not order any alcohol. And I still had a great time and, you know, had a lot of fun. And, but it also kind of, it makes you, I stopped going out to certain events that were centering around alcohol because that just wasn't really where I was in my life. So I decided, let's create an experience for people who are like me, because I'm sure I'm not the only one. You know, you've done enough research in what it feels like to get drunk or get buzzed, and now you want to see how you can cultivate the happiness within, and you also still want to engage socially and be inspired when you leave a place instead of feeling tired and, you know, like you want to pass out. So The Shine was born from that mission of just bringing people together around the concept of inspiration, and then started adding elements in meditation. There's no alcohol served, but then there's also like a TED Talk component where you hear a great speaker talk about something related to their personal story. And there's live music. I love live music. And there's food. Yes. There's great, delicious food supplied by this company called Sweet Green. And there's a philanthropy component where, you know, you spend $30 for a ticket, and then we take $400 of the proceeds, and we literally select someone from the audience randomly. Everybody gets a little raffle ticket when they come in. We call someone's number. They come up to the stage. We give them $400 from the ticket sales, and we say, here, take this and go out into the world and do something to help other people with, and then come back to the next event and tell us what you did. And that's always a really inspiring part of the show, because people can see how they can have a direct, they can help people in a direct way without a lot, without being Rockefeller or being, you know, some millionaire. You can actually do a lot with $400 to help people. And then it serves as an example for everyone else in the audience who's looking at that. Because, I mean, everybody has $100 or $200 in their bank account that maybe they were going to allocate towards, you know, going to dinner that month or something. But you can actually do a lot more with that. So the whole experience leaves people feeling like they can do more, they can be more, they can give more. And
what a great idea. I think I'm someone who doesn't drink as well. And there are times when you feel socially isolated to a certain extent because so much of our culture, you know, all throughout the country is based on alcohol. You know, you celebrate with alcohol, you watch a game with alcohol, you go on a date with alcohol. I mean, it's involved. So when you take that out of the equation, we actually joke as a family, like, I wonder if that's why we're not getting invited to too many different things, because we're the non-drinking couple. But I think that's amazing. So is it just in LA, or is it in other areas of the country, or what's your vision?
It's in Los Angeles every other month, and it's also in New York every other month, and we're actually expanding. There's going to be an Atlanta Shine soon. There will be a San Diego Shine in 2017, so look out for it. We'll definitely let you guys know, but I think those are the kinds of things that need to happen in order to kind of offset what we're seeing right now in the government. We need everybody to step up and do whatever inspires them and whatever they're passionate about and put it out there so that others can feel a greater sense of connection. And
yes,
if we
definitely.
All do our part.
No, I was going to, not to cut you off at all, but I mean, I think we all crave community, you know, and I think something like this creates that community where we have like-minded people, you know, where we're all kind of moving towards a similar yet different purpose, you know? So I think that it's such a great concept, and definitely let me know as you spread to other cities. We'd love to be involved and even spread the word when you get here or wherever. So our time is getting close, and I don't want it to slip away without giving you a chance to talk about your book that's coming out, because for those of you who might want to learn more, or, you know, just may want to learn more about light or about meditation in general, he does have a book coming out. So talk to us about that.
So I self-published a book called The Inner Gym about a year and a half ago, and it's a 30-day challenge for strengthening happiness. And it has meditation as a component, obviously, along with a few other happiness exercises such as gratitude exercises, random act of kindness exercises, things like that. And it was received very well. And then Random House approached me and said, "Hey, I want you to write a book about just meditation and how people can learn common sense, real world meditation tips and techniques." And so that's what I'm doing now. That'll come out in fall of 2017. And I'm really excited about it because I think it's going to be really big.
I think that's wonderful. And the book, again, everyone, is The Inner Gym. Mm-hmm. We'll have to wait, unfortunately, until the fall. But if you want to learn more about light before then, looks like we can connect with you in a couple of different ways. What's the best way to connect with you, Light, and even to learn more about the book as it gets released?
Yeah, so The Inner Gym is out now, and you can find that at lightwatkins.com. You can also keep track of wherever I'm going to be in the world teaching at lightwatkins.com, and then Instagram, Light Watkins, Facebook, Light Watkins, just Light Watkins, LIGHT.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I actually, honestly, I'm not just pretending. I actually feel a little bit better talking to you. I feel like when we know that there are tools we can use, that there are movements happening, that there's this whole community that we can tap into, it takes that sense of darkness away, and it should help all of us move forward and really contribute to the world, turning our own lights on and the lights on of thousands of people around the world. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, and we really look forward to seeing all your great work in the future.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tess.
Take care.